We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in you. We shall never surrender. We shall never surrender.
That's more cheeky, but...
It is more cheeky. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Art of Surrender. I believe this may be episode number 62. Number 62. And I'm joined by my good mate, the Punza from Higher Jiu-Jitsu, one of our brown belt coaches and one of my close friends. Maddie, Punza, mate, how are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to be back. I'm excited to have a yarn with you.
And, you are?
Talk about all things Jiu-Jitsu.
Well, you've been... it's been a while since you've been on my podcast. You've been on a few times now. I'm not sure how many, maybe like...
I think two.
Twice, is this the third time? And you were doing the Higher Jiu-Jitsu Stories one with... just the Higher Jiu-Jitsu podcast, I should say.
Yep.
With Johnny. He's kind of going on a little bit of a hiatus with that, which is understandable because, you know, he's got a couple of kids now, two gyms. He's trying to manage
really
everything.
He's got four babies, basically.
Yeah. What are you saying? Two kids and two gyms.
Yeah, that's it.
And those babies have, like, you know, 200 students in them or whatever
the
number is.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, funnily enough, you talk about the podcast. We've actually been talking about bringing it back. I think... You know, when we went offline with that, it was right before he had his number two.
Yeah.
Not before he did a number two, but his wife gave birth to his number two.
So she even takes his shits for him.
Yeah,
these days.
Pretty much. Yeah. She probably takes a lot of his shit. So look, understandably, the podcast wasn't a priority, but we've been talking about bringing it back. Johnny has been brainstorming some ideas in his spare time, and a lot of that podcast has a bit of a unique format in that he'll write kind of a short
blog post
basically, and we use that as the basis of the discussion. So you know, obviously we're not just verbatim recycling what already said. That I mean, that's anyone can just go on and turn a blog post into an audio recording. But it's really nice to actually have a discussion around these items and have different perspectives. So that we are looking to return to that, to the Higher Jiu-Jitsu podcast. And, you know, a bit of shameless self-promotion, but check it out. It's a really nice podcast. We cover a lot of Jiu-Jitsu ideas, more around, you know, how to get into Jiu-Jitsu, some ideas on what you should prioritize in your journey in terms of, you know, longevity, and how to get friends into jiu-jitsu, you know, even just little things like, you know, we talk about hygiene and, you know, coming to training in a sanitary condition for the sake of your training partners.
Yeah. You know, and have a conversation around that.
Cut your nails. Yeah. We managed to make cut your nails into an entire hour long podcast. Nah, it was way better than that.
You stand with fucking talons coming off your fingertips. Nah, I'm joking.
Nah, they're all right.
Yeah, no, they're fine. They're fine. I'm just making you self-conscious.
For real.
John's done a good job with that, man. And I think, like, a lot of, like, I've thought about this podcast myself. And, like, I think, I mean, I started this as a blue belt. Still a blue belt, but
eternal blue belt right here.
Yeah, pretty much, man, pretty much. But I guess I started this and I didn't have any like real kind of like ambitions for where it would go or anything like that. I just did it. I've been authentic. I've been myself. I've had conversations with different people from different gyms, friends as well. If I want to meet someone new, I'll reach out and make that happen, or I'll stick to my circle. Like, it depends on how I feel. I never force anything. And to just go with that. But like, I've had like visions myself, like, okay, if I don't have to do this every week, I don't want to burn myself out.
Yeah.
There's been periods of times where I've been doing it weekly consistently or fortnightly consistently. But my idea is I try to at least do one a month.
Yeah.
And this year I think I've had some months where I've slipped, but all in all, my goal is to do like minimum 12 podcasts a year.
Yeah.
Just keep them ticking over, man. And I see, like, as I move through the ranks and I get my black belt, because that's inevitable, I will get there. It will take its time, but, like, you know, I'm committed to the journey. But when that happens, you know, look back and see how many episodes I have, and then, you know, maybe, who knows, I'm teaching, possibly if I ever have my own gym, like, all this kind of stuff, like, puts it'll all come together at some point in time, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And even like the rash guards and stuff, I've done a couple of different designs and runs, and now I'm at the point where I project managed the whole thing and I had someone else do my design, mm-hmm. but now I've got Illustrator and I'm starting to try and learn how to do them myself.
That's cool.
My best mate, Mark, he's really good with yep. Illustrator, and he's done a few designs. I've showed you them.
Yep.
I want to get to that level where I can actually do my own and feed myself with my ideas and things, and like develop the skills over time. And John's kind of like done a really, he's done that, and I don't know if he's been deliberate about it, but he's got like his website. He does his blog posts. Mm-hmm. The blog posts are on the website. Yep. That's all has like the SEO component to it, mm-hmm. and whoever visits the page can like learn a little bit about the gym. They can learn. And then they can listen to the podcast and kind of feel almost like they know John or you or the academy before they actually even jump into it.
Yeah.
Or someone who's just joined the gym that's like uncomfortable has this podcast that they can go to and listen to all these episodes and feel like they're kind of like a little bit like they know people before they really do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hope that that's one of the things that the podcast brings for, you know, people who come to train with Hiya Jiu-Jitsu. Mm-hmm. And again, just reflecting, you know, the Hiya Jiu-Jitsu podcast in a way, we have an idea that we already know what we're going to talk about roughly, like have a rough kind of ballpark of where the conversation's going to go.
Yeah.
And then we discuss it. Whereas I think one thing that's really nice about your podcast is, you know, you were talking about how when you get to your black belt, you're going to look back at all these conversations you had and all these podcasts you've done. And that's all going to be part of your journey, right? Mm. The cool thing about yours is obviously you're coming into a podcast generally with a different guest every single time. And I guess you're getting exposed to ideas. Whereas we've already got our idea that we're going in with. You're going out and just having a conversation with all these, you know, black belts and professional athletes, etc., and then of course friends. But you're going in as more of a listener and exploring their ideas and their understanding of jiu-jitsu. Yeah. And there's no way that's not going to benefit your own growth, like on that path, on that journey to the black belt. Mm. You know, it's a really nice idea or really nice podcast in that you are. Going in, exploring ideas with no attachment or preconceived notion for or against what these people are going to talk about. And as I said, I think that's a beautiful thing. So
try to facilitate the conversation. Like yeah. I spoke to Jake O'Driscoll from Perth last week.
Yep.
Episode 61, it's out now. I don't know if you've listened to it.
No, I saw you released it.
Yeah. Dude, he's a great guy. He's been on my podcast a few times now. Mm-hmm. And of course, like before I have a guest on, like let's say Jake, for example, before I speak to him, I never like pre-plan what we're going to talk about, because that's just not how conversations should be developed, right?
Yeah.
Especially when it's a guest that you're not, like you and John do it together, for example, you guys want to talk about a theme or a topic on the blog, and that's great. When I do it, I'm talking to someone who comes on and they might speak to me like once a year,
yes,
for example. And I don't know where the conversation is going to go, but I'll obviously look through his Instagram. And I mean, I follow him anyway, so I kind of know what's going on in his life through what he shares on jiu-jitsu. I know he's been in recent competitions at ADCC and all that sort of stuff. So I know what's going on roughly, but I'll spend 5 minutes and I'll scroll through his Instagram just to make sure I'm like across what he's been up to.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, obviously I can talk to that stuff. And then when the conversation, I've like, I plant the seed around the specific kind of like ADCC, for example. And then as the conversation unfolds, I just go with it and ask questions and be curious. And the interesting thing about facilitating conversations like that, I was doing it for like almost a year through COVID and stuff. And then obviously I got the job at Salesforce and I moved back from Perth to Sydney into a sales role where my whole role now is like cold calling people, setting up meetings and conversations and stuff, and then having a discovery with them where I don't know anything about their business. Of course I can do some like high level research and stuff like that, but ultimately I go in and I try to facilitate a conversation and like talk around their pain points, talk around their challenges and gather information.
Yep.
And that's what I'm trying to do. And it's so like it's it's mind-boggling to me how much the podcast and being like on air or being on video, like Zoom calls or Google Meets or whatever, video conferences, how much doing that through the podcast has then translated into making it easy and seamless for me to do my job.
Yeah, I mean, you're practicing in a format that's something you're passionate about too.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you. I was actually talking with another guy this morning over breakfast. You know Billy from upstairs?
Yep.
Tiger Soul Train. Soul Train, yeah. And or on Instagram, he's Tiger and the Monk. And he's a really wise guy. So check him out on Instagram, Tiger and the Monk. Really big on mindfulness, spirituality, but also movement and that the combination of the two.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking about, you know, podcasts and how we think it's made us better listeners. Do you find the same thing? Like, especially in your, that there's a difference between your podcast and mine. Do you think it, not mine, but the Higher Jiu-Jitsu one, do you think that it's made you a better listener?
I would say so, because you have to, like, when someone talks to me, right, I can, while they're talking, I can sit there and kind of like scramble my thoughts for like what I'm going to say next to keep the conversation going, or I can actually actively listen to what they're saying and then like respond with like curiosity to find out more and actually ask them relevant questions based on the things they've said, you know. Or they might, yeah, it's absolutely helped. Obviously, like, it's probably also helped me express myself more as well, because, you know, I'm forced to hold up my end of the conversation too. You can't have someone on and then just expect them to carry it.
Yes.
You have to put in 50% or more or less, you know, but you've got to do your role too.
Role's listening though, don't you think? Like, as you just said, you can scramble your brain and kind of tune out and go, what's the next topic of conversation? Or you can listen authentically to what they're saying, pay attention.
Yeah.
And then the follow-on question probably becomes almost natural and intuitive, hey?
For sure. And like for the majority of conversations, you know, I'm not saying I'm that amazing of a communicator that I actively listen throughout an entire hour and just like respond and ebb and flow with the conversations like I do on the mats with my jiu-jitsu. As you know, my jiu-jitsu is elite and it's complete. So I'm just responding to the present moment at all times and I'm never out of that, right? But in the conversations, there's definitely lulls and moments where, like, you know, we get to the end of a topic and then maybe that's where some of my little bit of research comes in and I have something that I can shift to like kind of change the topic and transition from one thing to the next.
Yep.
And that's when I'm kind of like, you know, but there's like a balance of actively listening, going deep on an idea or a topic, finding out more and then transitioning onto the next thing.
Yeah. Man, it's funny that you hit the nail on the head on what my follow-up question was going to be, is do you find that listening also then translate that skill at listening and paying attention translates to your jiu-jitsu, your ability to listen to what's happening rather than going in and doing jiu-jitsu where I know what I'm going to talk about and I'm going to go out and say my piece.
Yeah.
And you can go out and you can you can have that jiu-jitsu, or you can listen to what they're saying, have a conversation and have an exchange. Mm-hmm. and you know, maybe if you're intelligent enough you can come out on the upper hand of that debate. Not saying that a podcast is a debate, but, you know, jiu-jitsu is a bit more of a debate.
Yeah.
Where listening to someone is really the key way to dismantling them.
Yeah. I don't know. You've rolled with me. You've probably touched me on the mats more than anyone. You tell me.
I touched you everywhere, not just on the mats. No.
I don't know.
I mean, look, there's definitely times where you like to do, maybe not in on the podcast, but in jiu-jitsu, you like to go, well, now it's my time to be big dog. You like to put the pressure on. It's nice pressure. It's very well, you know, I've learned from it, you know, because I've felt it. And then I listened to what you were doing and I was going, okay, what are you doing in this position and why is it so effective? You apply really nice, once you kind of work that path, get into those side control positions, you can be very, really good with your controlling or guiding even on top, you know, with pressure, connection, you do a nice job. So I listen to that and I go, okay, well, what are you doing here that you know, obviously I do things differently, but it doesn't mean I can't go, there's nice, can't recognize the nice things you're doing and apply it to my own game. And eventually, you know, I'll have nice counters for it too.
Yeah. Yeah. And you talked about opening and closing the hips.
Yeah.
Is that something you've kind of found off me? Not found.
Definitely you've been a part of the development of my understanding in the application of the hips in passing and being on top, even being on the bottom. You know, it's not solely you, but you know, I'm humble enough to recognize, you know, regardless of someone's belt level, whether or not someone has something to offer that I can learn from.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, I'm sure there'll come a day where a white belt walks in, and I could be arrogant. He's just a white belt, and I can probably school them in 30 seconds. But that doesn't mean I can't learn from them. That doesn't mean there's not a learning nestled in somewhere in that, you know, in that experience that I can't learn from. And I'd like to think I'm humble enough to recognize that, you know, you're a blue belt. I don't believe you are. I believe you're more than that. Regardless of the piece of fabric that you wear. You know, again, I know I can learn from you. You have other experiences in jiu-jitsu to me. You know, like an example of that would be Danny. Obviously people here don't know who Danny is, or most may not. He was one of my friends from when I was like 20. And in what, 6 years ago, he came along and started jiu-jitsu. And
for context, how old are you now?
I'm 32. I'm 33. 1989
or 99?
Yeah, 89.
I'm 1990, yeah. I just turned 32 last month.
I'm 39 this month. 39, 33. 80, I had 89 in my head.
Your birthday's this month?
Yeah, it's okay. Like 2 weeks or something.
All right, we'll have to do something for that.
I've been training, for context, 12 years. Danny came in 6 years. So he's been training jiu-jitsu for half as long as I have. And he's already caught up. Like, and I say that without, you know, being upset or jealousy. You know, I said at the same time, there's times I was, in a way, jealous, you know, like, but that's the beautiful thing about jiu-jitsu. We all have our own journey. And how can I get, I thought about it, and it's like, why am I jealous over someone else's success? Like, obviously, we all wish we could be the phenoms who become high level in, you know, 3-4 years. You know, like there was a guy who went to, the Aussie guy, heavyweight, went to ADCC. He's a brown belt in 3.5 years of jiu-jitsu. Like, there are people who just have a different journey to us, and that's okay. That doesn't, like, you know, I guess my point is Danny's been training half as long as me, but I know that there's a lot that I can learn from him.
Absolutely.
You know,
he's been training less than me.
Yeah,
you
for
know,
real.
Like, when he first came to the gym,
you were murdering.
I was murdering Danny. Danny, I fucking snatched that neck up.
Yeah, you know what? Like, that's the other thing.
And
that
now I come to class and learn off him.
That's the other thing, yeah. I've come to terms with.
I seek him out.
Yeah.
For grapples, but B, to like just learn off him.
Man, the dude is very high level. It's nothing short of incredible what he has done in 6 years compared to you know, myself in 12. But you know what? The other reason I never get jealous is because in the scheme of things, in context, it doesn't matter, because the day he walked into the gym, I submitted him first.
Yeah, so he's dead already.
He's dead already.
Yeah.
So as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't matter if he's caught up to me and now kills me.
You killed him, bro.
I killed him the day he walked in. I was the successful one.
That's it, man. You had a fight to the death.
Yeah, I was a survivor.
5.5 years ago, 6 years ago, and you walked out. You know, you left the room. You were alive. Your heart was still beating, and Danny got dragged out.
Unconscious on a stretcher.
On a stretcher. That's it.
So, you know, why would I be jealous that he's...
You chose to allow him to survive. And now you're able to learn off him. That shows your humility, as well as your ability to just always want to learn and develop.
Absolutely.
It talks a testament to your growth mindset.
Absolutely. That's it. No, I didn't kill him. I said, you know what? You can come back. You can learn from me, because one day I will learn from you.
That's it.
It's beautiful.
When the apprentice becomes the master.
Yeah. Something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. At least it's, yeah. But, yeah, it's pretty funny.
And yeah, the other thing, man, like I've had the same kind of things. Like you can be jealous and about whatever. And like I'll talk from a perspective that I can relate to. We had both Pat and Ben grade for their purple belts recently, right? Yep. I sat on the sidelines and watched that. And dude, like, I knew how I could feel about it,
mm-hmm.
But end of the day, man, they're both worked real hard. They've developed the genuine skills. They're ready for the belts, and they've performed the test. And like I sat there like really happy to see it unfold for both of them.
Yeah.
And like, dude, like everyone's journey is different. Like I was supposed to grade with them, right? Yeah. And unable to. And I look back and it's like, man, what do I give a fuck about someone getting a belt before me? And it's not even about them. It's just a general, like you said, just general in context, right? Who gives a fuck? Like, end of the day, man, our journeys all are our own thing.
Yep.
I've had fucking an artificial disc replacement and an ACL reconstruction.
Yep.
Like, what? You know, how hard am I going to be on myself to then compare myself to someone else who hasn't had to go through the same kind of suffering?
That's so unfair, right? on you, bro.
To do it. And, like, I don't know too much. I know Pat's had neck problems. He's had a bulging disc as well. Mm. And he took a lot of time to recover that. And now he's healthy. And it's good to see, right? Because I'm, like, still recovering, right? Ben, on the other hand, I don't know too much about whether he's had any, like, real injuries. I can't recall. But the guy works for the Navy. And he's had like months and months and months of time away and offshore on a fucking boat when he couldn't develop his skills.
Absolutely.
When we were. So like everyone's got their own like little, you know, you've got to...
He basically spends months in prison, essentially locked in a little tin cage floating in the ocean.
Dude, it must be such a lonely place to do that.
Absolutely.
Not anymore though. Like now he's on
yeah,
base.
I think he alternates.
I think he's pretty high up.
I think about what that would do for his mindset and his mentality. You know, like that, he's very mentally strong. I mean, in my perception, like, you know, you don't see that. Again, I guess everyone puts on a mask and a shield. You don't see what they're truly feeling. But man, like he's grown obviously through his experiences in the Navy, but also through his experiences on the mats. And he's now an absolute killer too. Another person I'm not afraid to like, to say I have so much I can learn from him.
Yeah.
Like, again, how arrogant would I be to not say that, you know? Jiu-Jitsu is the ultimate, you know, leave your ego at the door, right? You've got to practice it if you're in this for the long game, because there's so many opportunities and times where you know, you could allow your ego to create these little I don't know the right word to describe it, little dark spots, I suppose, in your soul where you feel, you know, jealousy, and that can slowly over time grow into anger and all other kinds of stuff. Like, we don't need to hold on to that.
If not managed. It's okay to feel jealousy, man. That's completely fine.
Acknowledge it, though, and just go, let's and work through it. Don't hold on to it and allow it to become bitter.
That's it. When it becomes toxic and stuff, and it affects your relationships and whatever with other people, then it's a problem.
Yep.
And like, you know, dude, one example, Danny, 6 years of jiu-jitsu, for example. Now I think he's about 6 years in.
I think
I'm six and a half now.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a brown belt. I'm not familiar with who it is, but 3.5 years in, right? But the other side of
competing
it is
like, at ADCC, mind you.
Yeah, I know.
3.5 years of jiu-jitsu at ADCC.
The other side, we talk about longevity and stuff. Dude, I don't want to get my brown belt in 3 years and win a world title, and then like 5 years down the track, I can't train anymore and I stop. Like, I want to be able to do this for, you know, for 30, 40 years, like whatever, is just be present on the mats until I'm, you know, an old man. If done correctly, that should be possible.
Yeah, and look, I mean,
be intelligent about who you train with. I've made mistakes in the past, and I have to pay for them now.
Yep,
That's on me too, though.
Yeah,
but like now, I'm just more aware of who I train with, where I train, you know, how my rehab for like prehab and rehab as well, my recovery, all that stuff. And I'm not talking from my ivory tower that like I've got it all down pat, but I'm making steps in the right direction with everything like that.
So I don't know if you've talked too much about these injuries on your podcast, but how is the recovery from each of those going? And you know, talk to me a little bit about how you went through those. You've been going through rehab and how it could have left you bitter and things you've worked through.
Yeah. Well, the neck is more of a sore point.
Okay.
Yeah, I got neck cranked, and I'm not like throwing anyone under the bus, but it was the no responsibility was taken whatsoever for it, and yeah, like I could be sour about it. It's pretty shit, man.
Yeah.
But I like, you know, moved on, and it like just on Tuesday at the fucking gym, man. Someone who's, you know, it's, well, we won't get into it, but anyway, I had to live with it, man. My neck got worse and worse and worse over time, and I wasn't training, and it was almost probably like I said, I've been training for 6.5 years, but I think it probably cost me like a year.
Yeah.
Realistically. And in that time, you know, I was going to work. I got to the, my neck got to the point where I was in constant chronic pain, and I could barely lift my head out of bed. Like in the mornings, I could not just sit up and lift my head.
Yeah.
I had to like roll onto my side, like use my anchor foot to get onto my edge.
Wow.
And like then build a base to climb out of bed, like genuinely. And like it was just constant chronic pain, and like that did affect my mental health. Like I don't know if anyone listening, if you've had pain that's chronic for an extended period of time, there's no two ways about it. It like affects you mentally, and it like, you know, like definitely affected me a lot. And I was going to physio, man, like twice a week, spending like $200 a week, you know, $800 a month, man. I didn't save any money for a year. If anything, I fucking struggled to even like get by, and my neck just was not getting better at all. And like then, and I ended up getting to the point where I'm like bitter at the fucking physio as well, you know, not just
really.
Yeah, man, because I'm like spending all this money and I'm not getting anywhere, and it's not getting better, and I can't train, and the only thing I wanted to do was train jiu-jitsu. Like, I didn't give a fuck about my job. I didn't give a fuck about anything else like that. I just wanted to train. And, I mean, I was still – it was through COVID as well. I was, like, doing the podcast. I'd started it. Something that really helped was Cam Sobes was doing his his Zoom. On Zoom, he was sharing, like, yeah, some of his jiu-jitsu. Like, he had a mount system, a crossbody system, and I, like – did those, and I was religiously at home, and I was even like sending him videos of me like doing the techniques on fucking like on a foam roller that I'd wrapped in towels and like put a gi on and a belt on and like built little arms.
Your COVID ghetto thing.
Yeah, man. Yeah, nice. Yeah. I was like doing all I could to just keep like my mind learning.
Yeah, beautiful.
And
though.
By the time I started, like, yeah, things started to get better. I had the surgery. It's probably like a year and something after it happened. I think it happened in November 2019, the injury, and I had the surgery in April 2021.
Oh, wow. So that's 18 months you were suffering before the surgery.
Oh, yeah, basically. Man.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, almost a year and a half, man, that I was in like constant chronic pain. And during that time, man, like I said, man, no responsibility was taken.
Yep.
Never had anyone reach out to me. Never, like, and I mean, this is me deep in my own, like, you know, like fucking upset about everything, right? Yeah. Like, you know, like no one's hasn't, the, you know, the person responsible hasn't checked on me. I've gone in, I've had an artificial disc replacement, still nothing, you know? And I heard like things from other people in the gym. It just like wasn't, you know, like just didn't give, you know, like didn't give a fuck. Should have tapped. That's all it was. Should have tapped.
Yeah.
Okay, no worries. So you're just going to fucking rip someone's head clean off their shoulders then.
Yeah. So it is like, man, I feel... it's obviously a horrible experience, and I wonder how many people out there have unfortunately had the same experiences. I feel very blessed to be training and be part of the crew at Hire, where, you know, we understand that we're working with each other's bodies, and that's so important that we can't injure each other, because if I injure my training partners, who am I going to train with, and who am I going to practice on to get better?
Yeah.
So it's so important that I do manage the bodies of my training partners as well. Like, yeah, okay, I could put you in an armbar and go, you didn't tap, so I'm going to break your arm, but like, you're one of my closest mates, I don't want to break your arm.
Mm.
Like,
This is something for everyone out there listening. I know most of you probably already have your gyms, and I think this is something that's not talked about. And just because you feel like there's a good culture or you've got a good group of friends doesn't mean your gym has a good culture. Like, I think some people, you know, you don't know until you know.
Yeah.
You know, until you've experienced something amazing. Like, you might not know that your gym has a crap culture, which is kind of, you know, maybe it's not a crap culture, but safety isn't a concern. And I think in a martial art...
I never heard safety spoken about once in a year.
Yeah, like, this is something never. Your gym
teaching
should be...
heel hooks and shit to white belt.
Oh, my God. This is something that should be part of the conversation. It's like, look, we need to understand that these techniques work, but just because they work doesn't mean we should be injuring each other. The safety of yourself and your partner is of utmost importance in a role. Even last night I was rolling with Benny and I was a bit uncoordinated. It was a bit slippery, you know, all these things. I kneed him in the head just accidentally caught him on the chin. My knee caught him moving past his head. The first thing I do is stop and I go, sorry, you know, you're okay.
Like, all right.
Yeah, he's fine. It was a gentle knock, but you know,
still, man, you knee someone in the head, you like pause
for
a second.
Exactly, you pause. And so I've trained with people who knee you in the head and don't,
and then
like,
you
from
go
other
back
gyms
to lunging in him with your elbows.
Yeah, but like, they accidentally knee you on the way through and they don't even think about it. It's just normal. So like, that's being rough too. Like, jiu-jitsu doesn't need to be rough, you know. Some people, you know, I guess you can train for a fight, but you don't always have to.
Yeah, that's it. That's
it. You know,
it.
Like, you don't always have to.
So,
but anyway, sorry, back to what you were saying. So
so it was like, man, my body hasn't felt, like, I have not felt, like, 100% since, like, November 2019. It's been, like, 3 years now. And, I mean, I broke my ankle before I moved to Sydney, so I have playing AFL.
You just got it. You're real fragile, bro.
Dude, I'd never been hurt before. I'd had, like, a few, like, not dislocated thumbs, but playing like cricket and footy over the years, I'd had a few jarred thumbs. I'd rolled my ankle a couple of times, but never had any injuries. And then I like viciously fucking broke my ankle. It wasn't actually a break. It was a full complete dislocation and rupture of all three ligaments in the ankle.
Far
it was
out,
brutal,
mate.
Bro. It was brutal. So that was an injury I had. That feels all right now. Like, I'm pretty good. I don't worry too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, my neck... and now, like, my body in general, I feel like I'm at 60%.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And I'm, like, and I'm dedicated to the gym, like, 4 days a week, 5 days a week, especially while I'm rehabbing my knee as well, and only doing jiu-jitsu, like, once or twice. Obviously, I watch stuff as well.
Yep.
And then as my knee gets better, and I'll come back on the mats more, and I'll probably do like 2-3 days a week in the gym, and then jiu-jitsu like 3-4 days. But basically, yeah, man, I was just doing the rehab on the neck after the surgery. All of the nerve pain and stuff like that dissipated after the surgery. That all went away, so I actually had pain relief completely. And I wasn't taking I took a little bit of like anti-inflammatory stuff occasionally, but I like, you know, I never got into like, you know, full pain management, like taking drugs and shit, because like, fuck that, maybe smoke a little bit of weed here and there, but that obviously doesn't...
Bit of herbal pain relief.
A little bit of herbal pain relief or a little bit of oil here and there, you know? But, yeah, man, the neck started to progress, and then my best mate, Mark, like lifelong best friend, was a brown belt. He's training at Sustainable Jiu-Jitsu under Professor James Woodfield Jones, and so I started training with him more. And to be honest, man, that's where I should have been. As soon as I moved back from Sydney, I should have been at that gym the whole time,
training
with a lifelong best friend. That's what I should have been doing. But like, the gym I was at was a 5-minute walk from my house, and his was like a 40-minute drive.
Yeah, that's
so. I didn't. But that's so my bad.
This is something to just to, sorry to interrupt, but to finding a gym. If you're starting jiu-jitsu or you're trying to convince your friend to start jiu-jitsu, make sure they find a place with a good culture. And sometimes it may be a bit more inconvenient, but you know, this is it's important for you. Jiu-jitsu is about, it's not who's best, it's who's left.
That's it,
you know. And so you might be, someone might be great for 5 years and then stop training,
If you want, like, and then in 10 years' time, it takes me the same amount of time to get there, you know, coming back to that discussion of what Danny's done in 6 and what I've done in 12. Still, it's, you know, if Danny stops now, which he won't, but like as an example, as I keep going, I'm gonna eventually be the one who's left still training, you know. So,
and at the end of the day, man, find it doesn't a gym matter that's if worth you're it. Better than another person or not.
No, it's absolutely just about not,
your ability to fucking stay on the mat and keep growing 100%. And like, dude, when you're injured and you can't train, you understand, that's when you realize, like, you don't give a fuck, you just want it in your life.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't matter how good you really are. If this person at the gym's tapping you on a Wednesday night,
100%,
and it's a problem for your ego, yeah. Well, what's more of a problem is you not being able to train at all.
That's the worst thing to deal with. That, like, yeah, as I said, and you've obviously, you know, with your knee,
yeah,
happened pretty soon right after your neck got better.
Yeah,
so your knee went.
I'll continue.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So the next stuff, I started training with Mark and with James, and I was probably training with them for, I don't know, like, what was it? So if I injured myself in November and I had the surgery in April, I moved back to
Sydney.
I moved back to Sydney like a month after my surgery.
Yes.
And so I was training with James and Mark consistently for 6 months, and like I developed a lot in that time.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot, man, a lot. Like, I had all of our kind of like syllabus stuff and the stuff that we learn in our gym, and that was like obviously my game, you know, that's what it was. And then, like, from them, like, pressure, how to apply pressure over time to people.
Yes.
Was, like, I've never been steamrolled and melted into the mat with finesse like that before. And I kind of, like, it's a different thing, man, when you feel that.
It absolutely is. And that's definitely, you know, you ask about how you feel earlier in the potty. And that's definitely one thing I feel from you. And I've definitely picked up and implemented myself. You have a really nice, just progressive melt you into the mat kind of style, and that's something I've been applying, and I've spent probably, you know, since you've come back, and I felt that the way that it's done, and it's not forceful, as you said, it's done with finesse.
I mean, like, you know, I'm not a seasoned black belt. No, you know, maybe mine can be forced here and there.
But it's still an idea.
It's an idea working towards.
And it's something that I've been able to explore and, you know, develop my own understanding of. One thing I'm, funnily enough, like, I think I did spend a lot of time really trying to refine that idea and how I can apply it from various positions. The thing I'm finding now is I've been melting people into the mats from, like, you know, but people have learnt that it's when they try and get out that they're exposing themselves, and so people are getting smart now, and they're just learning to get comfortable getting in that space, like how to keep something, you know, keep a frame in, whatever it may be, just to survive.
Yeah.
And they're getting comfortable being under that, which is, you know, great, because they're developing something as well. They're not panicking.
No, you're still going. Yeah, I have an example too.
So now I'm finding I've got to actually release the pressure now, because I want them to open up so we can have some jiu-jitsu. Like, I think it's got a time and place, and I'm now in that part of, okay, when can I release the pressure but I only want to open one door.
That's it. Yeah.
So it's like, how can I release the pressure in just the way that you think this is the right way to move?
And then they move that way, but there's a trap way.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I want them to think it's the right time.
The other side.
How to be threateningly unthreatening.
I hate to bring up, Conor McGregor, man. Do you recall him talking about wanting to be able to move in all forms?
No.
He's like all different styles.
Yeah. Okay.
You reckon it's like karate, taekwondo, yep. You know, like he wants to be able to move in all the different ways that you can move in martial arts.
Yep.
Like human movement kind of thing. Same kind of idea with jiu-jitsu, right? You can be scrambly, you can be heavy pressure, but if you can like move between those different.
Yeah, you can even be free and loose.
Like spinning. Move between the different ideas at different times depending on like what's needed or what's required.
100%.
But yeah, so I developed a lot, like I feel like I learned a lot from them, or it definitely gave me ideas and stuff to work on, which I'm still working on. And yeah. then I came back to Sydney, and you mentioned like not panicking, right? Like I remember first training under James, and I'd never felt pressure like that before, man. And when, dude, I'm telling you, man, when you feel it, you're going to feel like a fucking child. You're a brown belt. I swear to God.
No, I already feel like that with black
belts.
And it
was just like, it was the second we touched and he applied pressure to me, I knew already that I couldn't do anything
yeah.
before he'd even progressed on me. And it was that instantly like obvious to me that I had no answers. Like I swear to you. But I got to this certain point. I never like really, I actually had pretty good like self-control like that. I never panicked and spazzed out. I was already pretty like good like that.
Yep.
But I definitely like, he just like, I was able to sustain it and keep my shit together for a while, but eventually he just either wore me out, or I made a wrong decision or whatever, and he was waiting for that opportunity to snatch up like whatever I gave him.
Yep.
And it was like, you know, all right, here you go, tap and go again. But then I remember like coming to higher jiu-jitsu, and we had a, like when I first moved back, and I'd been a few months after my neck surgery, I was starting to recover. I was actually moving all right and I was going pretty good. And this was before my knee injury, right? Mm-hmm. We had a brown belt come in and visit, and he definitely, like, I'm a blue belt, right? He definitely was more experienced than me, that's no doubt, but he was on top of me, and his pressure, man, like I was underneath him feeling his pressure, and I actually remember like almost like a mental thought to myself, like almost like an internal giggle, like this pressure is not enough to overwhelm me. Like yeah. I can actually, this pressure this person is giving to me is not enough for them to overcome me.
Yes.
Like maybe he's got more techniques. Maybe he moves better than me. Maybe his decision making is faster than mine. Maybe he can close those doors and get me that way. But he cannot overwhelm me with his pressure, because I can handle so much more.
Yes.
Because I've been fucking underneath someone like James wearing on me.
Mm.
And my ability to take that pressure has improved a lot because of that.
And listen to what that did. It's almost like that confidence and willing to surrender to a position and go, yeah,
there's no urgency for me to have to get out, because I know I can take this. You know, obviously that's a diminishing return. You can only take it for so long until you gas out and you can't take it anymore.
Yep.
But like I definitely had time.
Yep.
Right. And so that was like a moment for me, like a brown belt I'd never touched before, who I didn't know came into the gym. And I like had that realization, like I can actually, with the pressure they give, I can hang with that.
Yes.
And I can probably apply just as much as they give to me. Like if I'm on top of him, I can probably apply that same pressure almost.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But yeah, so that was it. And then, my neck, obviously, you know, like maybe I hadn't recovered fully. So like I had some little bit of a setback there, but my neck's come good now.
Yep.
And I'm just dedicated to the rehab, and then riding my push bike to jiu-jitsu, I slipped off the pedals and my foot hit the ground.
Yeah,
and
that's such a nasty.
Left my knee 10 meters behind itself and blew my knee apart.
Yeah,
and
now I'm hell, man.
Now I'm 6 months post ACL reconstruction. Had a little bit of a meniscus, a little bit of a MCL strain. LCL and PCL are okay.
Yeah.
And I had some meniscus that was torn, but they were able to suture it back down.
Yep.
So that should be okay. And now, 6 months post rehab, I went to the physio today. I've been dedicated to the physio. I was going twice a week every week, and then I was going once a week every week this whole time. And in the last like month, we've changed it to fortnightly.
Yep. How does
so
he?
It's getting there, man.
How does he say you're progressing? In terms of, you know, not to anyone else, but correct me if I'm wrong, I remember the forecast was it was going to take you a year to be back on the mats. And you are obviously back on the mats for, you know, one to two sessions a week. And obviously it's you're looking after it and taking it at the right pace for where you're at. You know, you're not rolling hard or anything. But how does your physio think you're progressing, I suppose, in that context?
He's pretty happy. Like,
would you say ahead of schedule, or?
I'd say there, yeah, I'd say so. I'd say probably, like, a little bit ahead of schedule. He's happy.
Yeah,
he's happy.
Nice.
We're still working on things.
And how do you feel when you're in the gym on the mats? Like,
I definitely feel, bit compromised, a little bit compromised, and I feel, like, put it this way, I wouldn't just roll with someone.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I'm not ready for that, you know, like someone reaping on my knee or pulling on my knee or like using hooks to drag your leg and mm-hmm. shit like that, man. Like, fucking, that's it's an immediate concern.
Yep.
But, dude, I roll with you. I'm able to, you're able to give me pressure. I give you pressure. We move around. Mm-hmm. I can still be heavy and still move and do things, but just not, I don't want to be full scrambling or mm-hmm. fighting or that kind of like, intensity.
Yep.
So if, as long as it's controlled, I feel all right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just smart with who I train with. But all I'm really focused on right now is not so much about like grappling and having roles and trying to catch people or get caught by people. It's not about that. Yep. It's more about just like spending time on the mat, progressively increasing the amount of time I spend on the mat. But I want to ease into it without getting too ahead of myself, because
mm-hmm.
I'm someone who dives head first in and like, you know, yeah, I'd do it too much, I'd get injured, then I'd be set back again. Yep. So I'm just trying to like keep my head on a swivel and be smart about it. So yeah, it's going good, man. And I'm just focused on drilling the techniques and trying to improve my skills more than grappling hard, because that will come.
Yeah, so you're really focused on everything that you can impact and affect and not really the results or the outcome.
Yeah.
Which I think personally, if even from my own experience, say for example lifting weights, I guess this is going to come as advice for anyone who wants a practice of longevity, is that if you want something to be sustainable, you can't be attached to the outcome of the practice. So in a sense of how many taps did I get, or am I getting better faster than Danny, or whatever these comparisons you might have to other people, you can't let that ego be involved. So I have the same thing with lifting. I've been lifting now for 9 months probably consistently.
Yeah.
And that's like, I used to,
and your physique has changed.
I used to lift weights when I was a white belt and a blue belt and, you know, all that sort of stuff, but it was never a consistent practice and never one that I maintained as a consistent lifestyle, primarily because, say for example, you know, I'd chase numbers when I was in the gym,
right?
So if I'd be in there, and then as soon as I'd stop growing in those numbers, I'd lose interest because I was attached to the outcome rather than the practice itself.
Yeah.
Whereas now I don't care about how much I lift in the gym. I've gone in there with a complete white belt, day one white belt, beginner mindset, and I've got a great gym where I'm training, but that's at Soul Train. I'm attached to the habit of being consistent. And just, yeah. Because of that, you know, the funny thing is, by doing that, I've been training, lifting weights for 9 months now. I've never squatted over 100 kilos in my life. And I've done that. I've ticked that off.
Are you talking about like a
back squat?
On your back.
One rep max.
See, I'm not putting the back on my back yet.
Yeah, okay.
I'm doing like deadlifts with the T-bar.
Okay.
Yeah. Sticking to those.
I mean, look, you'll progress.
Is it called the T-bar?
I don't know.
The
trap bar.
Yeah, the trap bar, that's it.
Trap bar deadlifts. Man, they're nice. I really like trap bar deadlifts. But yeah, so I've come in and look, my bench hasn't grown as much as I wanted it to, and I could be upset and triggered by that, you know. But I'm not attached to the outcome. I know that that's going to come with time.
Yeah.
It's that consistent practice.
Consistency and being able to do the act is so important, man. It's so important. Like I said, like I kind of harped on about my injuries and shit for fucking what feels like ages, and it sounds like I'm sooking, but
no, I'm just asking you questions, bro. I'm trying to probe.
Yeah, no, I know. But like, yeah, I've had my moments of being like upset about it and having to like, you know, like, fuck, man, feeling sorry for myself, really.
Yeah.
And we all, you know, we all can and we all do. And that's okay. But like, end of the day, man, it's like, I see it as a form of you know, suffering. And out of that suffering now, like, I've had to have some pretty, like, traumatic things happen, mm-hmm. and me to be able to, like, suffer and overcome. And through that, like, I have full confidence in my ability to, like, to suffer.
Yeah.
You know, like, through ankle, through all of it, man.
Through,
like,
James Woodfield, you know,
on you. Yeah. And even just mental health in general, man. Like, now it's like, okay, like I, it's like, it sounds arrogant to say, but it's like, okay, we're going to suffer, are we? Well, I believe I can suffer more than you can suffer, you know? Not comparing myself to you, but that's like, you can almost build your confidence in your ability to go through suffering. And that is something that for the rest of our lives, we all have to suffer in different ways. And if you know that you can suffer and you can deal with it and get through it, there's like almost a certain like strength in that.
Yes, you know? Absolutely. It's a resilience.
Yeah,
I think,
man,
that's the best word to describe what we're talking about.
Call me stubborn, if you
want.
It could be stubborn. It could be resilient is almost like the uplifting way of saying it. Stubborn is almost it's just a fucking stubborn donkey, 100. Man. He just won't quit, you know. But that's there's something in that too.
Absolutely. There is something, like, I'm not saying, I don't want to say anything like use the word trauma, because it might trigger some people, but when you come out the other side of it, and everyone's trauma is different, everyone has a different journey, and so how you get out the other side of it is, you know, there is a process to healing and recovering from it, and that will be different for everyone. So I'm not going to give anyone any advice. But let me tell you, when you do finally get out the other side and you recover from it, it builds fucking resilience. Like, at the end of the day, and again...
And empathy for others.
100%.
Because you're forced to go to your knees, right? Mm. You come out the other side with resilience and other traits, you know, that you may not have developed without those injuries or those, like, whatever it is that's occurred in your life, right? It doesn't have to be an injury, but this is just this instance for me right now. You have to overcome that, but then you get the ability in hindsight through suffering yourself to have empathy for others, because you at some point had to have empathy for yourself.
It helps, you know, it allows you connect better, because you can have empathy for people, so you can connect with them better. And that's one of the beautiful things about a jiu-jitsu community is the you're going as a practice, we're making each other suffer.
Mm.
But we're supporting each other as we're doing it. So at no point, I don't know, like, if you've got a great gym, you know, like, we'll put hell amounts of pressure on each other. It feels like melting into the floor, you know, like, being able to withstand that, like, as an example, I've made people tap just from my mount pressure. But then, you know, if you get to a blue belt level, it's much harder to tap blue belts with just pressure, because generally they've been through they've stuck around for 18 months. They've built some resilience through their jiu-jitsu practice. Maybe they already had resilience, but they probably built it.
They've refined it, whether they've refined that skill, whether they liked it or not.
Yeah, exactly. whether they're aware of it or not.
Yeah.
You know, like, but, you know, at that point, they're no longer just wilting to a position and being stuck there. That's the thing. Sometimes in life you are stuck somewhere. Maybe it might be under mount. You might be stuck in a rut. But you've got the resilience to know that eventually there's going to be a fucking a way out. There's going to be a ladder for you to climb. You know, like, ruts suck, but there's always, with patience and resilience, there'll always be going to be a way out.
Mm.
Whether you see the light at the end or not, like, it will be there.
Yeah.
You can. That jiu-jitsu is a beautiful practice for giving us that. That resilience,
man. Fuck, what about you? Like, you competed recently. You got silver at what was a national?
New South Wales State.
New South Wales State.
No, I did a double Bradbury.
I did. Talk to me about it.
So I rock up on the day, obviously, my entire side of the bracket, no shows. So, for, like, 16 people bracket for both. Gi and then open weight gi.
Are you thinking, as a brown belt, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it would theoretically, in my mind, I'm prepared for four rounds.
Yeah.
A potential of four rounds per division.
So the guy I went up against goes through four people and I'm in my first match.
Yeah.
So, you know, anyway, it was fun. So I automatically got silver, which is kind of funny. Same thing happened in both my divisions, though. That's the weird part. Like, literally my side of the bracket, no one shows up. His side of the bracket, everyone's there.
Yeah.
And they didn't change it. They're just like, oh, it's just how the bracket is. So, you know, I did a Craig Jones, scored two silvers.
Yeah. But you hurt your wrist?
Yeah, I got wrist locked pretty hard. It was, look, the guy had a really nice setup for it. And it was hidden well, cheeky. He applied it with a lot of force, as people do in competition. It's only recently I'm not getting pain when I post on my hand anymore.
Really?
Like, it's, so that's been three it months.
3 months, fuck. Yeah. And then I snagged it.
Yeah, look, I mean, that was an accident. That's been happening,
dude,
man. Like,
I knew that it was, you know, a weak spot on your body, so I started hunting for it.
No. But
what's the story? What actually happened? Was I, you were passing my guard?
No,
I was passing.
No,
yours?
I think you just clipped your leg on the way through.
Like, got your finger. Caught in my gi. You know,
my fingers got caught, and so my hand just got taken along for the ride. Yeah. I wasn't even grabbing your pants. Literally, as your pants went past, they just caught like my fingers, and just wrist locked the shit out of me. But yeah. Look, it is what it is. But.
And now I carry your wrist around in my back pocket.
He's got it as a trophy. He's actually made a mold of it. He showed me at home. He made a mold of it. He's going to take it down to the trophy factory. They're going to make a nice brass trophy of my hand.
I've been talking to the boys saying, like, you should have seen me on Wednesday. Like, I've got Maddie with a vicious wrist lock. Yep. You know, I've been full talking it up. But the reality is... Your finger got caught in my gi pants and it was completely accidental.
As you, like, completely switch your base, my hand just gets snapped off.
But it's fine now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That competition, that was fun. As I said, like, I think it's important that people compete, but I also understand that competition doesn't necessarily align with longevity. And if you want to be a competitor, if you want to win... In my opinion, if you want to go out and really win at a big title, you need to be competing frequently to have the resilience, because it's not the same topic.
The intensity.
But just being more comfortable at that speed, because, you know, unless you're in a shit gym, you're not rolling at that speed all the time.
Things happen in competitions very fast pace without any finesse.
Yeah, well, sometimes there's finesse, and the high level there is finesse. It's just, you know, you need to be comfortable and frequently at that intensity. I don't think that intensity should be part of your training practice, though. So, you know, I think if you're competing, you should be in every single local tournament every other fortnight. Because then by the time when the big ones come around, you've had 50, 60 competition matches compared to the guy who's had three.
Yeah.
Like, he's more comfortable. Ring rust, for lack of a better word. You know, I hadn't competed in 6 years. 6 years. And then I'm like, oh, you know, I haven't competed since I was a blue belt. I'll go in this competition. And then come up against people who literally, like, in the last 2 years alone, this guy I fought in the finals, was he's had like literally 120, 130 competition matches in 2 years. Who's game ready? Who's not?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think skill wise we were very different. I was sweeping him. He was sweeping me. Like, we were both doing nice jiu-jitsu to each other. I think he was competition ready and I wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, I rock up kind of coming out of having COVID, not really thinking
coming
like
off the couch.
Oh yeah, I'm just like
entering a competition for the first time in 6 years.
Yeah,
exactly,
right? Just a bit of fun. And there's this guy who takes it very seriously. What do you expect?
Yeah.
You know, like,
but I thought, like, you held a good enough account of yourself, man.
Yeah, as I said, I didn't feel you know, like, we talk about that resilience and comparing people. I didn't feel like he had any pressure or offered anything I'd never felt before that concerned me. I think he was quicker to the punch.
Yeah.
To be honest, I think he was practiced at being quicker to the punch.
Yeah.
You know, okay.
Got room to improve.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Highlighted some mistakes that I've been tightening up, some fixing up some holes. You know, I made some strategically stupid choices in that competition, but again, I was at a much more, that pace was uncomfortable for me when it was comfortable for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, yeah, I'm resilient at being uncomfortable, but you know, who's going to win it? He was dictating the pace, I suppose.
Yeah.
So it was his pace he was comfortable with, one I wasn't.
Yeah.
So he has more chance of success than I do.
Yeah. Are you know? You have plans to compete again?
Honestly, no. Look, I think maybe I will. I don't want to say I'm not. I will or I won't.
You just scratching an itch.
Yeah, pretty much.
That particular weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, it was an itch I'd had the year before. I wanted to compete at purple belt because I in my mind I wanted to compete once per belt.
Yeah.
A minimum once per belt. I competed like 50 times between white and blue, but then after that I stopped caring. I just wanted to train.
A couple of your blue belt competitions. Yeah. I've seen you win matches.
I just wanted to just train and get better. I didn't care about the competitive aspect of it, so I didn't do it for 6 years.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know what how I got to that, but.
I speak my mate Mark, who got his black belt. I think it was in December. So yeah. Like, what's that like?
He's got really nice jiu-jitsu. We had the pleasure of training when he was in Sydney recently, and he's got very nice jiu-jitsu. Very good understanding of body mechanics and jiu-jitsu and pressure and everything. I had a very fun role with him. He's got very nice jiu-jitsu. If you're in Perth, I don't know where he is in Perth, check him out.
He's just opened up a new gym now. Yeah. He started it called Clarity Jiu-Jitsu. It's on Instagram, you can look it up. Yep. Clarity Jiu-Jitsu, it is what it is. But he's got a proper facility opening soon.
Yeah, dope.
In the meantime, he's very intelligent, man.
Yeah,
very
you can tell. He's
like a natural athlete too. Like at school, Mark was like champion boy. He used to win the cross countries as well. He's a freak athlete. Man, it's funny. He played AFL, everything, man.
I didn't feel any of that in him when we rolled because he's that technical.
Dude.
Like that's, I'd say if you're listening to this, I don't know why anyone listening to this wouldn't be doing jiu-jitsu, but, and you're in Perth, check him out. Cause like I felt him and you saying he's a natural athlete. He just moved with grace, finesse, and like technically he didn't use any athleticism to basically dominate me. That's how nice his jiu-jitsu is.
Yeah. Yeah. He's going to do well, man. Mm. I'm excited to see his like gym and stuff all open up. It's all like very early stages, you know, like he's got mostly his mates and like their girlfriends and things like that as his students. Mm-hmm. And he's built a little base of, members yep. that are like that don't know him, and he's so like it's all kicking off
very but nice
he went to like almost like a I forget what they're called, but it's almost like a movement facility, and he basically rents like a corner of their
gym,
their space,
yep.
and lays out the mats and kind of like started off that way,
yep.
and then you know obviously through doing that gets access to the members of that gym who might have an interest in jiu-jitsu
100%.
And now that he's built up enough like kind of members, you know, he wants to get his own space and yep. actually try to open the doors and build an academy and shift to teaching full time.
Why not?
All that stuff. That's yep. the plan. What about you? You still commit? That's still your commitment?
Yeah, man.
Talk to me about that. We're like an hour and 3 minutes in now. You want to keep talking for another 5 or 10?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm in no rush. That's still a while away. So I'm trying not to think too much. Well, at the moment, I'm just thinking about trying to get all my affairs in order.
Yeah.
Like, is that an end goal? Yes. Absolutely. I mean, one, I want jiu-jitsu to be my life. And you know, I'm already blessed enough to be a teacher in jiu-jitsu and to be teaching and spending 15 hours a week, 15 to 20 hours a week on the mats. You know, yesterday I spent 5 hours on the mats.
How much are you coaching?
50%
scheduled classes compared to privates.
So compared to probably training, 4 classes a week, 4 privates a week, and probably about 8 to 10 of my own training. To like, is probably a pretty accurate representation of my schedule.
Yeah. And gym. So you're full on with it, man.
And then I'm lifting weights 3 times a week. My missus bought a Peloton, so I'm now doing like 3 or 4 hours of riding a bike a week. You know, it's like if there was ever a point in time for me to compete, I would be in such a better shape now than I was when I competed, you know. Like my entire, I think I did about 4 cardio sessions before that competition to try and get fit. Like
yeah. All you probably did was blow the cobwebs out of your lungs.
Yeah, that's you know, exactly. I certainly didn't create anything there. But now I've been like, you know, as I said, probably four rides a week. A ride might be half an hour to an hour.
Yeah.
So I'm doing a lot to really for my fitness.
Are you just talk to me the Peloton stuff? Is that I know there's a screen because I saw it's in the corner of the room. Behind that's a wall. Does that matter that it's just you looking at a wall, or do you like when you're looking at the screen? Like what do you see?
I'm actually trying. Like I'm finding I don't want to look at the screen because then my head's forward, and I'm putting unnecessary stress. Yep. You know, like you know, think about the standard visualize a person sitting down, not looking at their phone. They're looking at their lap, aren't they?
Dude, you're talking to someone that's had disc replaced. I'm super. Always aware of my neck posture.
Yeah, so 100%.
Try not to like have like an anterior.
Yep.
Try not to have my neck open. Or
that's kind
or
of
over too much.
Really, what I've been focusing while on the bike. Like, we could have it closer to the wall where the bike is, but we've actually put it out so it's far enough away from the wall that you can't
touch the wall.
Yeah, if you're in like a T position, like bring your hands out in a cross.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can't. So it's quite in the. Away from the wall in that regard, but we've got a window behind it, so you're kind of looking out a window.
What do you do? Just dose up and fucking get into the zone?
Man, just like, honestly, I'll just come home even after a JIT session. So like, depending on, you know, I went to a 6 o'clock class during the week, then after that, got home and did a 45 minute ride straight after.
How far do you reckon you're getting in 45 minutes?
20 Ks in a 45 minute ride, probably. I think, look, it did, I'm doing a kind of, so I've only had the bike for like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm working my way through a 4-week program because the Peloton's cool, man. It's got like, it basically comes with a subscription.
Talk to me about how it works, man, because I see them, the shopping
marketplace. They're dope.
I'd be interested in buying one. I don't know if I want to drop $2,500?
$3,000 basically for a bike and a screen.
Plus a fucking subscription. What's that, $40 a month?
The subscription has, if you're like, for my missus, she loves it. So she does like their workout program. We bought weights and stuff at home. So we've got a little mini, I wouldn't call it a gym, but we've got a bike and some free weights.
Yeah. That's all you need.
Bro. Yeah. And so she's using their yoga. Like they've got yoga classes. They've got like exercise classes. So if you've got free weights at home, you can follow along, do like biceps, and they've got proper PTs running in it.
Really?
So it's all
so
like.
Peloton does more than just the bikes.
More than just the bike. Then they've got classes like. They've got live classes every day in like different languages as well, different music styles.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty dope.
Do you need to, if Gaia wants to do one of the
we can both
yoga classes, do you have to do it on the Peloton screen of the bike or can you download it?
You can download an app or you can open it on your laptop.
Oh, mate, that's awesome.
But yeah, so I'll be on the, literally like sometimes she'll be in the other room doing her class while I'm on the bike doing, you know, like one of my program part of the program where
what's the kind of on-screen stuff like the different like
depends like it's cool man like
functionality does the screen have and the different thing options and
so
programs.
Like the different programs is all there's a game bike mode
the
where
gamified version
they've gamified it which is that's how I got into it funnily enough because I got on there I was like oh, I don't want to do classes I don't want to do being kind of snobby you know like kind of going in trying this new thing with a preconceived idea.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of stupid on my behalf.
That's what
we all do. Yeah, like, it's what we do. When my missus bought it, I was like, I'm not going to use that. It's all for you. I'm not
paying half.
I'm like, I use it more than she does.
Yeah.
But it had this game mode, and it was really simple. Like, it just has, like, you to hire, like, 7 lanes of resistance.
Right.
So as you turn the resistance up, you move into the faster lanes.
Oh, right, I see.
And then you get, there's like, just each lane will have like a typical point accruer, like an icon or whatever that you collect by being in that lane.
Oh, So as you see it coming up to you, you can shift across.
Correct.
And the pedals will change resistance, but you've got to do that to get to the...
Correct.
The
and so then that, and then they'll have like different little things, like if you ride at this cadence in this lane, you get bonus points. And then you'll have like, in you know, they'll different color icons for like lengths of time.
Yeah.
Mean different things. So just that gamification of it, I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. I did that for like three rides. And I was like, okay, well, I'm over that. They had like a scenic...
Is it a straight line?
It curves and like loops around and stuff. Oh, yeah. They had like a scenic mode, which I didn't really enjoy at all. But it's kind of cool if you're into it. It's like you pick a landscape type and they've gone in like a Google Maps car and recorded driving down the road.
Oh, okay.
So you actually are driving through the Alps or whatever. Like, and as you pedal, it goes faster. I didn't really enjoy it. I did one ride of that and was like, never doing that again.
Okay.
maybe because I was riding too slow.
Right.
Or it felt too slow for me anyway. Cool idea, but it wasn't for me. So then I just ended up getting into the classes.
And how do the classes modes work?
They'll generally do like a 10-minute warm-up, and it's just like an instructor who's generally was probably a professional cyclist. I think they all were at some point.
Live or pre-recorded?
Both.
Both.
I've not done the live ones, but I just jump in the pre-recorded ones. So that's like a program I'm doing. It's kind of been good because it's been teaching me how to ride the bike. Like I've been, and some of the instructors will give you cues on how to make your cycle, your strokes smoother and all that sort of stuff to get better at more efficient power outputs.
What are some of the things you like have learned?
Just like changes in form. And this is coming back to where this all came into it. Like my posture is one of the things I'm really focused on, is making sure that I'm not too hunched. Actually, I don't want to be hunched at all. I'm not outside trying to get aerodynamics. That's not a concern. So I've got like this nice straight spine, as you said, chin backed. So I'm not even looking at the screen usually because I'm focused on my posture. And then I'll look down at the screen to...
With your eyes.
Yeah,
your
just, posture. Correct. Just with my eyes, I'll monitor like my cadence and output.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just be monitoring those to make sure I'm where I want to be while following along. And they'll tell you to go at different output levels, etc. You know, so I've just been trying to build it up, improve the muscle activation, body brain proprioception or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
Trying to just get all that so I'm firing in really nice smooth strokes.
That's what she said.
That's what she said. Yep.
Mate, that's awesome. I went to my physio today. Was saying a little bit of my right quad isn't quite firing as nicely as my left, which is, I mean, understandable.
Yep.
So I'm going to, obviously I've got the rehab stuff he's given me, but I'm going to start riding the bike at the gym more.
Cause yeah.
It definitely gives you a nice burn on your legs, man.
They've got bikes with like the
adjustables.
Clips.
You can clip your feet into.
Yeah. Not clips, but even like they've got the little thing for your foot to hold on, so you can, you know, really work the full circular movement rather than just pushes. You're also getting the hammies and everything, like the full leg becomes involved when you clip into your pedal.
So it's not the leg itself isn't like clipped and attached.
Yeah, but it's got the loop.
It slides in, it's got the loop, you tighten it up.
Yeah,
so your foot's connected
as long should be fine. Sure. So you can
man, they're good. I've been riding, but like, dude, I went on the bike, I rode like 5 minutes, did 2.5 k's
yep.
for a warm up. Then I go on the treadmill, run for 10 minutes, yep. do like, I don't know what, almost 2 k's or something like that.
Do you reckon that the bike would be better because it's less impact, or does the physio say anything about that? Because that's like a common thing I've been told, is running, you know, bikes are better than running because it's low impact on the knees.
It's low impact on the knees and the ankles. And I've had, you know, it was, funnily enough, it was my right knee. That's right knee and right ankle that I've injured. So it's
completely buggered that leg.
Yeah, the bike is definitely softer on my body, uh-huh. but there's something to be said for like running. You know, like
it's a natural movement, right?
It's a natural movement, and as part of my rehab for ACL, like I need to be able to get back to like full sprint.
Yes.
Or it doesn't have to be top speed. It's not like I'm doing 100-meter races, mm-hmm. you know, anymore, like at school and stuff. But I want to be able to like run confidently and feel normal running. So I'm working to that point. But yeah, but I think long term, I'll probably spend more time on a bike than running.
Yep.
Just for like when it comes to cardio.
Yeah. Look, man, I highly recommend the Peloton. It's a really cool experience.
it's expensive, and I understand that's not an outlay some people want to make. If you've got the stuff at the gym, then you know, go do it at the gym. You know, if you can for free. But for a home setup, dude, it's been amazing.
Yeah.
Maybe I will compete next year. Maybe in a year's time, see how my fitness evolves after another year of consistent riding.
Before you get your black belt.
Yeah, imagine.
You can like test yourself at brown belt again.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're swimming in the deepest waters, you know, as a brand new black belt.
Yeah, I mean, no, I'll probably will do one more comp as a brown. As I said, just get really in shape though, rather than being a couch potato rocking up.
Yeah.
I still wouldn't change how I train, even if I was competing, and I didn't change how I train, to be honest. You know, which most people probably would, but as I said, this is a thing that's fun for me. Not if I take it too serious, I don't want to burn myself out. So
yeah,
I'll just get in shape and enjoy it, you know, and
just not get hurt. Yeah. All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on.
Man, thanks for answering my questions and you know, opening up about your experience.
That's all right. I haven't talked about it that much, I don't think. Like bits and pieces, but not full conversation about it.
Yeah.
But like all in all, man, I like, you know, I'm in a good spot, man. I feel good. I'm happy with where I'm at. Things are improving. Like my jiu-jitsu is still there, you know?
Yep. And absolutely it is.
Looking forward to like getting back onto the mats and getting back onto like the path properly and progressing and
yep.
Just to, you know, getting better and better and helping other people, all that stuff. My max on 10%, so I think we're like getting to the end of it, mate. Yeah. We're an hour and 15 in, it flew by.
Absolutely.
We sat down at the start and we're like, what are we going to talk about? I don't know, we'll fucking figure it out as we go.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go, everyone. Off the cuff, I hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoyed that. Maddie, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
We'll do again soon, for sure. That's two in 2 weeks with Jake and yourself.
Beautiful.
And on Tuesday, I'm doing another one with Peaches, so... his name's Josh. He's one of Jake's students. He's a black belt competitor from WA.
Oh, nice.
He competed at ADCC too, so that'll be interesting. Looking forward to catching up.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, everyone, thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next week, and then hopefully the week after that or the week after that, and we'll just keep chipping away at these, and, you know, you'll see me when you're looking at me.
Us.
Cheers.